Welcome to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. We are happy to have you back here on a Thursday night. We got a special guest in here tonight as we... You know what? Shout out to Lily first. GM Jared just left. His daughter is obsessed with this song, so we thought we'd kick that off as our special guest picked a Queen song for tonight. As we welcome in Marat Atesh from... The Athletic. Marat, how are you? It's great to have you in here. You're doing some fantastic work over on The Athletic. It's nice to finally be able to sit you down and maybe pick the brain of yours and get all the Jets knowledge out of it that we can possibly dig out of it.
Hey, it's so good to be here. It was so fun to just walk back through campus, have a little nostalgic look around, and it's good to meet you here, and we'll talk whatever you want. I got lots of time for this.
Sure. No, yeah, we got lots of time. We got a full hour to spend chatting with you, and let's get into the big thing first, because this is where I think this was one of the most crazy, fantastic things I've seen in a long time. You've been posting it on Twitter, and it's been outstanding in terms of, I hope it's getting good response. I don't know what it's like. I mean, I'm sure you have a better idea, but I hope it's getting good response that... You're going to be busy on Saturday from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Goodwill Social Club. That's at 625 Portage Avenue here in Winnipeg. Making Valentine's Day cards for people. For those that don't know, it'll be Valentine's Day cards for women and children that are currently in shelters, which is an outstanding, outstanding idea, I think. How did this whole idea start?
So I'm going to say it was 2015, I met a woman from Winnipeg who's a writer and had worked for the Metro. She has her own zine. She's done a whole bunch of different things in Winnipeg's arts community. Her name is Meg Crane from Winnipeg. And what she really is excellent at is writing, creating, producing all sorts of things while wearing her values on her sleeve. And through getting to know her, I knew that she had the Stitching Hearts program that she runs. And it started in 2015, that same year, with just a couple hundred cards, if that, I think, to shelters in and around Winnipeg, and maybe a little bit in Canada as well. But then each year since then, she's been collecting these handmade Valentine's cards. People at schools have gotten involved. People all across Winnipeg and Canada have gotten involved.
Oh, wow.
And she sent them all over Canada. And now that she's based out of Montana, to the States as well. And it's this huge, huge project. Thousands of cards get made by people all over the place. And it's just impossible not to want to help out with that.
Yeah, no, that's incredible in terms of the amount of people that are involved. Let's throw a number out there. How many cards are you hoping to make on Saturday? How many cards do you want to see made? Maybe that's the better question in terms of having, you know, some people come down, volunteer their time and make some cards with you.
Yeah, you know what? This one's almost it's so difficult for me to guess because this is my third time hosting this, and they've all been at the Goodwill when we have this men's event.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do a men's thing separately because of just how embarrassed I was with my own craft making skills. I think I told you earlier, I've been drawing the same cats and dogs since I was 6 years old, and
that's
I've never
okay.
really gotten any better than that. But the messages are positive and they're good. To just follow up on that, the other major reason that we're doing this men's event is just to acknowledge that we're disproportionately the perpetrators of domestic violence.
Sure, yeah.
And to be able to have a space for that. And in the past, with a little bit of promotion and a little bit of discussion, we'd get, you know, 10 people out over the course of a few hours, 10 to 15, and we'd make somewhere over 100 cards.
Oh, wow.
Which I thought was amazing. I was so happy with that. But then, as you know, because we talk hockey... my profile on Twitter would have gotten a lot bigger this year since past years and things like that. And thanks to folks like yourself, thanks to folks at TSN, CBC, CJOB. The response this year has been huge online.
That's awesome.
So how many are we going to make? I have no idea. I'm going to have cards making supplies there for everybody. You can just show up. There's going to be scissors and glue and paper and all that sort of stuff that you need.
Right on.
And if we get... I don't know. We had 10 last year. If we get 20 people through, we should be able to get over 200 cards, and we'll scale up from there. I really think it's going to be bigger this year.
That is great. I mean, again, obviously you can't sort of demand a staff in terms of what you're going to do. Volunteers will show up. Like you said, 10 to 20 would be great. More than 20 would be fantastic. What's the response been? I mean, I don't know if you've heard from other cities in terms of what's the response been in other cities, though, in terms of, you know, attracting attracting people down to make cards for these women and children?
I think that most of the time what happens is that somebody is connected to Meg somehow.
Okay.
And there have been little pockets spreading out depending on where you are. Winnipeg's definitely the hotbed because that's where she grew up and where she started this program as well. And I think that it's grown very much by word of mouth and people getting involved with it and telling somebody they know. And it seems like, and the more I'm involved with it and the more messages I've gotten, even on Twitter this week, a lot more of us are connected to situations of domestic violence or folks who are in shelters than I really ever anticipated. And to find out how many people are trying to take those situations and do something good with them or see an opportunity to do something a little bit positive, bring a very simple act of kindness. There's nothing ambiguous about it. It's just kind. It's good.
Yeah.
And I think that's really resonated with people.
Do you know where they're headed? Do you have any idea as to where they're getting distributed, if I say that word right, distributed in Winnipeg in terms of the various places and shelters they may be going to?
It's my understanding that Meg has put together a massive list of shelters all across Canada and the States as well. And if it exists in Winnipeg, I'm expecting that she's connected to it in some way. That's a huge undertaking. And then for us on the day of Saturday, and she's organizing events all throughout the month as well. But on Saturday when we make them, we won't know exactly which human being is going to be on the other end of them.
Right, yeah.
So we'll make as many as we can. I'll let her know what we've been able to put together. And then depending on that, she'll be able to assign me which shelters to send to, and depending on numbers and try and distribute it that way.
That's fantastic, though. I mean, I think that this is one of the sort of the greatest ideas. You know what? And like I said, I tweeted at you before and I said, you know what? I'm going to come down and I'm going to throw my, again, I probably have, you know, the greatest stick figures ever created in terms of my own abilities there. Nothing more than that. But at the same time, though, I think the idea that getting these cards made and certainly doing something great, like you were saying, in terms of, you know, of helping some of these women and children that are in the shelters, is a bigger thing than just, you know, it's another day on the calendar sort of thing. So if you're interested, by all means, get in touch. You can talk to Murat on Twitter at WPG Murat, Murat. If you're looking to get in touch with him in terms of what's going on, Goodwill Social Club, Saturday, 2 to 5 PM. That's at 625 Portage Avenue. If you want to come down, bring your kids, bring some friends, bring whatever you want. We want to make a ton of cards. I'm going to say, let's aim for that 200 and break it by leaps and bounds if we can. But again, huge altruistic effort by yourself and obviously by Meg in terms of what she's doing. Glad to see that somebody's doing something awesome like this, and I'm happy to help out. So thanks for letting us talk about it. Number one, we'll circle back to it at the end as well. But I'm happy that not only, and again, I hate to say it this way, it's not the hockey community, but actually the Winnipeg community, you know, helping out in terms of being just good humanitarians here.
Well said. Absolutely well said. Like, the hockey community is what I'm connected to the most, but it really speaks about Winnipeg. Absolutely,
right.
It does. Well said. And that you're coming on Saturday as well. That's awesome.
I am glad to come down and help. Like I said, as soon as you post that, I was like, that's a great idea. I'm gonna make the effort to get down there. So that's huge. We're waiting on Beans to get in here. Beans is tied up in traffic right now, folks. If you're looking to figure out what's going on, there was some sort of protest today down at Portage and Main. I don't know if.
Oh yeah, solidarity with those folks whose land is involved with the pipeline.
Yeah. So I don't know if he got stuck in that, but he's like, I'm going to be a little bit late. And I was like, oh, okay, whatever. Just get here whenever you can. So let's not, I mean, we'll come back to the Valentine's Day cards in a bit, but we're in here to talk hockey as well. And I'm pretty certain you know a lot about it because you're one of the best writers that I've seen in a long time, again, with The Athletic, in terms of getting everything going with that organization. So let's talk about sort of the theme that's been dominating the newscasts for a while and dominating the news stories. What's wrong with Patrick Laine?
That's a wonderful question.
What is plaguing Patrick Laine right now in your mind?
In my mind, it's a combination of him being 20 years old.
Yeah.
Excellent at some things. We know that goal scoring is his hallmark and will always be. Since he broke into the NHL, he scored the second most goals behind Alexander Ovechkin over the last three seasons. He doesn't play a huge amount at 5-on-5, though he's certainly not getting buried there either. And I think that the biggest thing with the guy who shoots as well as that is that you want to create as many opportunities for him as possible to be in shooting positions. And the first key about that is zone time.
Right.
And he, in and of himself, is not a phenomenal player in his own zone. He's got hustle. He back checks, but sometimes he back checks so hard he scores on himself. You know, there's some details yet to come with him. But the effort is there if the coverage isn't. And so he's not going to be somebody controlling play in the defensive zone. And he's not hard on the walls necessarily in the offensive zone either. Those little things that maybe the more grindery types of things like a Perreault or a Wheeler might be able to do along the wall to extend that zone time in the offensive zone. So with Patrick Laine right now, it's about his stick skills, in my opinion, what he can do and with the puck. The line that he's been playing on with Little and Connor has been just mediocre in terms of possession stats, in terms of how much time they're spending in the offensive zone. So those shooting opportunities aren't coming right now. He's down to something like 6 shots per 60 minutes at 5-on-5, whereas in November he was at 12. Like, he's shooting half as often at 5-on-5 as it used to be. You don't want that from the best shooter or one of the best shooters in the entire world.
So the question becomes, I mean, you were just talking about how, you know, quote-unquote mediocre that line has been in terms of their possession stats. Nikolaj Ehlers out now in terms of having an injury, probably going to be out till mid-February from what the team has said. They've moved Jack Roslovic on that line. I like the way that Jack Roslovic has played in his limited time on the, you know, third and fourth line in terms of what he got, but now getting a little bit more of an offensive role. Is Brian Little the right centerman, or are we going to try, maybe we'll see the Jack Roslovic experiment there at some point, simply because it looks like, I don't know if Brian Little's this right, as you were saying, in terms of possession, the right guy for the job at that point, but again, I don't know if Roslovic's the right guy possession numbers either. So is there going to be some sort of change there? Will we see a change? Do you know anything that may be coming down the path for the Jets on that one?
The sense that I get is that Jack Roslovic at center and even second line center is a long-term project that Winnipeg is definitely investing in.
Okay.
The fact that they kept him on center or at center on the fourth line for as long as he did, even though there have been some growing pains, as intelligent as he is, I really do like his two-way, his hockey IQ, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
But there were lapses in coverage. There were moments where he was kind of also in picture, I would say, on goals against and things like this, despite the fact that he sort of does project to be Little's heir, perhaps, as the years go by.
Yeah.
So I like him a lot as a winger, and I think the promotion is deserved. There's some things that he does very well. When I think about Brian Little, I don't see a guy right now who's driving possession. He doesn't by himself control where the play is on the ice. When he was with Wheeler, the two of them could do just about anything they wanted. When he plays with Perreault, the two of their stats are quite excellent as well. And so the solution that I see at second line, especially with Ehlers injured right now, is Little with Perreault and Laine together.
Okay.
So they're under 100 minutes at 5-on-5 over the last two seasons, which isn't massive, but it's a decent sample size. They're well above 50% in terms of their possession numbers.
Yeah.
They're well above 50% in terms of the goals that they've scored as well. And for me, that's because Perreault is the anti-Laine. He's not a massive finisher, but he does so many little things that just extend time in the offensive zone.
Yeah.
And when... I don't think Brian Little is the answer by himself, but he's not spent. He's not done. He absolutely can do a lot of things. So when you put together at least two out of those three guys being strong possession-wise, I think that some of those goals are going to come along for Laine as well.
So looking at that, I mean, to be honest, I don't think the Jets would be wise to break up that third line of Perreault, Lowry, and Tanev right now with the way they're playing. Like, they're playing outstanding as well. They're possession demons out there. They legitimately wear down other teams. If the Jets can't find a solution for Patrick Laine with line mates, is there anybody, based upon availability, is there anybody in the NHL that you would like to see them go after, knowing that that player may be available for a trade?
Well, if we're accepting that it's Laine on one wing and Connor or Ehlers on the other one, and you're looking for that solution in the middle, or you have Laine and Little and you're looking for a winger, I think the most important thing that you could possibly look for is somebody who meaningfully controls where the game gets played, somebody who's defensively responsible. You don't need somebody with dangles or finishing ability like Laine. You want to create as many opportunities for him to shoot as possible. I look back at last season's trade deadline, and I just think that what a rabbit out of a hat Paul Stastny was.
Yeah, totally.
And I don't know that it's reasonable to expect Kevin Cheveldayoff to be able to continue to pull rabbits out of hats to the extent that that I think Stastny was. And not only did he sort of create a situation where suddenly Ehlers and Laine were slightly above 50% possession-wise, but everything was bouncing off of him and in. The goals were there. if I'm going to look at the trade deadline and look at weaknesses that Winnipeg can address, I'm actually kind of looking at a Jake Muzzin sort of situation, somebody who can pair with Dustin Byfuglien on the second pairing and sort of solve things there.
So Jake Muzzin, I mean, is a great pick, and don't get me wrong, I mean he might be legitimately might be the best defenseman playing right now for the Los Angeles Kings. Drew Doughty arguably would be in the mix, but again, Jake Muzzin has certainly looked good. I think the price to get Jake Muzzin is going to be high, and it's always going to be something like that in terms of trying to get the guy that you want, and I'm not going to debate that. Are there any other fits? Anybody else out there that might be sort of that, I don't want to say second tier, but maybe the next guy in line that, and again, I'm not saying if you can get Jake Muzzin, go get him. Like, don't get me wrong. But is there anybody else that you go and you look at and you go, he'd be just as good, maybe not as offensively gifted as Muzzin, but just as good defensively as Muzzin?
There's a player with a no move clause out there that I think would be a good fit as well. And he's got Manitoba Moose connections from his history, and that would be Alex Edler playing out in Vancouver right
okay.
now.
Okay, yeah.
And there are some reasons why I think that at left defense he'd be a fit for Dustin Byfuglien as well. And, I mean, he has some familiarity with Winnipeg, so maybe there's a wave there in terms of his no trade. The issue, of course, is that Vancouver suddenly finds itself against all odds in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that's not something that anybody really saw necessarily when the season began. Can they stay there with injuries and things like that? I'm not sure. I'm starting to read folks like LeBron or Custance or some of those heavy hitters in terms of being connected talk about him as a maybe in terms of being a movement. So that's why I'll even say his name, even though it seems that maybe Vancouver would be best served to hold on to him too.
Looking at sort of big picture, Beans, welcome to the show. Speaking of big picture, welcome to finally made it in.
I'm not going to blame traffic or the terrible drivers of this city, but that's why
traffic and terrible drivers, right on. So we were just saying Murat and Beans, Murat.
Hey.
Nice to meet you guys.
Nice
in terms
to meet
of
you.
There we go. All right, everybody's good in terms of what's going on here now. We're just talking Jets, getting into the Jets story.
Sounds
we just
like
went
it,
through
yeah.
Patrick Laine. For those asking, Patrick Laine right now, 3 goals in 12 games in October, 18 goals in 12 games in November, 3 and 15 in December, 0 in 3 games so far in January. A little bit of a drop off there.
Can
in
you
terms
say?
Of,
can you say streaky?
A little bit streaky. Yeah. But again, I think that you know, Maratton made a good point though. I mean, we're looking at a young kid who just learned in the way.
Yeah,
my big thing, and maybe I'm wrong on this, and I know you watch enough hockey, enough Jets games anyway, Murat, to certainly maybe counteract this idea. What I see out of Patrick Laine, just going back to him for a second. I think he ran into the same problem that Ovechkin ran into in years 2 and 3, where everybody knew where he was on the ice. That he's not finding that seam, or he's not finding that spot that's different from where he usually sets up. He's right on the dot almost every single time, just with the stick ready to go in terms of having it in the air. Is there a chance maybe to, and I don't want to say move him around the power play, where he shoots from is phenomenal, but is there a chance to maybe move that maybe move him into the seam where Scheifele is, maybe move him into the middle there where Scheifele is, and give him that opportunity to really maybe change the focus of the defensive system around him? Because it looks like right now that everybody just knows the puck's going to him every time on the power play.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've talked to Paul Maurice about that a little bit, and the thing that I learned from him that I didn't necessarily know was that the power play was originally designed in mind for Scheifele, Laine, and Byfuglien to all rotate, all those right-handed shooters.
Oh, really? Okay.
They imagined it being a lot more flexible in terms of who was where.
Yeah.
So the fact that they've sort of picked offices and shoot from there is sort of just what's happened, as opposed to what they drew up on the board before it all really began last season. In terms of Laine's mobility there, you know what, though? I don't mind it. When I look at the 5-on-4 shot rates, he's actually shot more often at 5-on-4 this season than last. And from a visual side of things, sometimes he can be a little bit stagnant, but then I've seen Blake Wheeler like put it off a skate and then have a second opportunity to make the pass and then make the pass after that as well. In the beginning of the season, when Laine wasn't scoring at all, he was doing, and this is something that I wish that he would do all of the time perhaps, but he was scanning that lane and he was floating up and down and looking for spots as well. I think that the balance for him is always going to be between how aggressive he wants to attack that lane up and down and Blake Wheeler's ability to find him and their ability to communicate. I think the most impressive thing to me is how consistently Wheeler seems to be able to make that pass. I think there's a lot of mental strength there. The one thing that bugs me about Lining on the power play is his ability to keep the puck in.
Yes.
And when Winnipeg's power play was slumping, as it was for the last couple of weeks up until recently, I think the biggest thing wasn't their in-zone play, in my mind. I don't think their power play's formation has been solved so much as they weren't getting set up and spending time there. And I think that one of the major reasons for that was that the puck would get rimmed around the wall and he just wouldn't be throwing his body against the boards, as you might expect.
Yeah.
And then maybe Jack Roslovic gets the promotion. I don't know. But because of that really nice play he made on the power play,
yes,
where he set up Brian Little, yeah, just after he threw his body against the wall, kept it in, kept his own time going. So there are little things, especially when the offense is so deadly in the offensive zone, on the power play, anything that involves the blue line and getting set up matters so much to me. And I think that that's something that he really does stand to improve on a fair bit.
Anyone throwing their beans in terms
of... Well, I mean, I find Patrick Laine's game, he's more impressive in his game when his feet are moving and when he's aggressive, when he's physical and he takes the body. I find when he does have droughts of scoring, he's not as quick to the puck or quick on the puck or as aggressive in the offensive zone. He seems to float a little bit more. So I find that when he does move his feet and when he does hit and use his body, because he's a big guy and he's heavy and he can throw his weight around quite well, that he is more, you know, a better asset for the Jets at that point when he can do more of those things and he scores more and gets more open. So
physically engaged, yeah, is what you're looking for.
Yeah. More physical.
He and Maurice have each said a few times over the last year that, like, when Laine moves his feet, he's a better hockey player. So yeah, they definitely, you and those two are on the same page.
There we go. Yeah.
It's funny, though. I mean, he was talking about the malaise, sort of the you know, the same thing happens every year, like, don't worry about it sort of thing or whatever. And I just go, like, again, he's just a 20-year-old kid adjusting to an 82-game schedule. Like, I think, yeah, that, again, you've played your rookie season. Congratulations. But, again, this is going to take a couple of years maybe to get the... I gotta play hard for 6 straight months, if not longer.
Yeah, I think, and we'd have to double check on this, but I looked this up at one point. But when this season started at 20 years old in a few months, he was younger at the beginning of his third NHL season than Alexander Ovechkin was, yeah, in his rookie season.
Yeah.
And that's something I think that we lose sight of, is just how young he is. And that does matter when you try to project these guys in terms of their talent and their ceilings.
Yeah. No, I mean, to me, it just sounds like a 20-year-old kid. Let me get into it again. Let me get going again. Just get off my back, sort of thing.
Maybe he's struggling at Fortnite right now, and that's affecting his game. Once he gets better at Fortnite, his game will be better.
Listen, if you're going to ban it on the road, just join the Canucks, okay? Brandon Tanev was mentioned this week by Sportsnet's Elliot Friedman as possibly the odd man out for the Jets when it comes to the summer. I don't know if the Jets can afford to give up a guy like Brandon Tanev. I don't know if they have a guy who's sort of the next in line to take his spot. But what does Kevin Cheveldayoff have to do to try and convince Brandon Tanev that this is the place for him? Maybe we can't pay you what somebody else can pay, but if you want to win, this is where you want to be. Is that the right message?
I think that's exactly the argument. And you've heard it from guys who even get less minutes than Tanev, say the fourth line for a long stretch when Perreault and Roslovic and depending on who the other winger was.
Yeah.
And I would ask those guys, like, hey, what is this? How does this grade on you? Does it grade on you? And all those sorts of things. And they sort of convey that it's the price you pay for playing on a team as deep and as good as Winnipeg is.
That's fair, yeah.
With Brandon Tanev, I really do think when you look at his sort of with or without you stats, if you're into the possession stuff, he does so much better with Lowry and with Kopp or Perreault than in other situations or that these players do without him.
Right.
So I think that he's a very, very useful passenger at 5-on-5 is kind of how I see him. I think he's got a fit with those players. They know how to use him. His wheels are unparalleled in terms of what he does. The trick is to not believe that the 15 goal scoring pace is real or when he gets hot and all those sorts of things. So I think the argument is this is a great place for winning. This is where you've come into your own. You've got chemistry with these guys and like you're well liked, all these sorts of things. If Tanev suddenly starts commanding, like a 20-goal scorer's salary. And this sometimes happens. I remember George Laroque would score a hat-trick every once in a while, and you would start asking for this is another example of a grinder with a much different style, but he was also good with the possession stats, but not the goals usually. That was a weird tangent, a TANF tangent, but all to say he's a guy that that winning argument you mentioned makes a lot of sense for. It's just about keeping the price reasonable because every dollar counts in this city.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially with all the contracts coming up. Beans, do you...
I
know you're a huge TANF fan.
I like TANF. I know. I find he's a great penalty killer, blocks tons of shots. He's one of the highest shot blockers in the league and as at a forward position and one of the most physical. I mean, he puts up 5-6 hits a game. Like, there's not too many guys that have that pace. But one guy I kind of, when I was watching the Avalanche game, and he scored, Andrew Copp scored a goal, and he didn't look very happy. He seems like he's maybe not impressed with his fourth, we'll call it a demotion. I know there's been a lot of injuries and a lot of line shuffling, but he's one guy that kind of, to me, kind of, he's always had kind of a little smile on his face, but he looked a little unhappy where he was.
The glass punch that you're evaluating.
Yeah,
that's a long gap between goals for him though too.
Yeah,
so,
it is. I'm sure
monkey
that
off
was,
the back at that
was,
point, right?
Yeah, maybe monkey off the back. Yeah, but he just kind of seemed even on the bench and with his play, he kind of seemed a little bit. He was aggressive out there. He's playing a good fourth line role, but he just seemed a little unhappy. But
I mean, that goes back to what Murat said. I mean, you can't really be angry with the depth on this team,
exactly.
And that third line right now with Perreault, Tanev, and Lowry it might be the best third line in the league.
Yeah, and I mean the problem is there is injuries, right? We do have injuries. Yeah. Ehlers is out, you know, so there is injury, so there is line shuffling, and that's one thing good thing about the Jets is that anybody can play in pretty much any role on that team. So
For me, I have spent a lot of time thinking about that glass punch and just the emphasis of it.
Yeah,
and there were a couple of I try to like why where did that celebration come from?
Yeah.
And I know that line had a really good shift at the end of the first period. I know they were scored on a little bit later in the game, but the battle that he had with Nemeth that led up to that goal in front of the net, he actually swats Nemeth's stick away to let the puck trickle through him to gather that puck up, and then he buries it after that. So I just imagined, without knowing, just speculating, that it was just satisfying from a physical point of view to win the battle, have the puck come through, and then bury it as it does. Yeah. But I don't know about it.
He's the only one that knows, I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm sure he'll keep it to his as a secret for now, unless something bigger comes out. Just coming up to the break here in terms of the bottom half of the hour starting. Going to take the quick legal ID break. We'll be back in about 15 seconds. Everybody hang tight here on The Hockey Show, 101.5 UMFM.
You're listening to CJUM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba, Winnipeg.
When a man needs a woman's love so much, in a beautiful love story, not all love is beautiful.
All right, we are back here on The Hockey Show, 101.5 UMFM. We got a couple of mentions of things that I got to go through here just before we get into the second half here. If you're free on January 27th, I'm not sure if you're aware, but the Charleswood Hawks and certainly the entire area in Charleswood in terms of a great guy, Wayne Descower, happened to pass away late last year. Huge, huge hockey guy in this province in terms of what he's done. The MMJHL Charleswood Hawks are going to be hosting Wayne Descower Tribute Night at Eric Coy Arena against the against St. James on January 27th. If you're going to get down to that, I would highly suggest you go. CJOB's Kelly Moore will be sort of emceeing the tribute night. They're going to have a whole big thing about Wayne Descower, so nice to see them paying the respects there. Secondly, if you haven't heard and you're in the market for a black tie event, which some of you may be, if you haven't got your tickets, make sure you get them as soon as possible, because tickets for the Manitoba Bison Scholarship fundraising reception on Monday, January 14th are going quickly. It'll be located at the Journey to Churchill Center at the Assiniboine Park Zoo. Among the various people you can meet there, Paul Maurice will be the guest speaker, Winnipeg Jets head coach. So Paul Maurice will be in doing a little chat with everybody that's there. Prizes are ridiculous at this event as well. There is one right now that's valued north of $5,000. So the prizes are quite extravagant in some cases. If you want more details, head over to gobisons.ca and get your tickets. Tickets are a little bit pricey for people that want to know. It's $200 a ticket. However, in saying that, limited to 150 people. So they're cutting off limitations due to the size of the event and the availability of prizes. They want to make sure people get a chance at winning the prizes. And again, you get a chance to meet Paul Maurice. Rumor has it there may be a Q&A for Paul Maurice. So the only bad note on that, I'll be emceeing it, so it's going to be awful. Sorry about that, folks. Sorry about that.
Whoops.
There's your blemish on the night.
Yeah.
Let's get into the other stuff, though, in terms of what's going on. Murat, you can probably speak to great lengths on this. As the Jets face the Wild tonight in Minnesota before a three-game homestand, where they will play Detroit tomorrow, and the Anaheim Ducks on the 13th, Vegas Golden Knights on the 15th, before the Jets meet the Predators in Nashville. Why do we bring up the Predators? Because there's three games separating them right now. Jets have a big chance to put a gap between them and the Predators. For those asking, Nashville's in Columbus tonight before visiting Carolina on the 13th and hosting Washington on the 15th. So the Jets will use up one of their three games in hand over the next few days. Let's get to the important thing, though. Do you, either of you, both of you, predict the Jets will be alone in first place by the end of January? I can give you the remainder of the games if you want to hear them in a second, but do you predict they'll be alone in first place in the Central Division by the end of January?
I do. I think the games in hand are in their favor.
Yeah.
Just strictly, emotionalistically, from the math sort of point of view, Nashville's got the cavalry coming. Their health is getting better at the time that Winnipeg's is getting worse. I just think that the games in hand and the points in the bank are meaningful.
Beans?
Yeah, and I think the Jets have proven that they can win pretty much with any lineup they throw out there. Even on a bad night, they seem to win their games. So, I mean, the bus keeps rolling for them. I think they definitely can hold on at the end of January for first.
So after that Nashville game where it's legitimately a four-point game, Nashville has Florida at home, and then they go to Colorado and Vegas to round out January. Winnipeg will play Dallas, Philly, Boston on the road, and then finish their January with Columbus at home. So schedule doesn't really favor one or the other, but at the same time, though, I think that coming into that 17th game, having Carolina and Washington on the road, I think Nashville's got a little bit of a tougher schedule than what the Jets do with Anaheim and Vegas in there, Detroit in there as well. So I think they will be in first. I think there's a good chance they take first place all the way through to the trade deadline, and then after that, we'll see what happens. But
the density is finally being a little bit nicer to Winnipeg. December, they played more games per day than they will at any point in the season. So things are finally leveling off. We were looking around, actually, in the press section at MTS Bell MTS Place. I still try to call it by its old name. The other day, because Paul Maurice is actually his second All-Star game that he's going to.
Yeah. Okay?
So he was an assistant from his Hartford Whalers days.
Right, way back when.
And we were looking at the standings the day of the All-Star game that season, wondering, well, Hartford wasn't really great shakes at that point.
Right.
It turns out when the team was selected like a month before that, approximately, they were near the top of the league and then hit a massive losing stretch as well. So Paul Maurice is in for now, and he's the guy that's going, but depending on what happens in January, who knows what we'll see when he's representing the Central Division.
He might take the time off with an upper body injury or
something. let's not jinx them in any way, but a win tonight in Minnesota would be a good first step anyway, put them back into first place. Obviously they need Columbus without Sergei Bobrovsky. If you heard the news today, Sergei Bobrovsky suspended for tonight's game for an incident that occurred, quote unquote, as per the release. I thought, although I don't know if this is the actual case, maybe you have heard other things, Murat, maybe you've heard other things, Beans. It appeared that John Tortorella and Sergei Bobrovsky had a bit of a disagreement following the Tampa Bay, following Bobrovsky, getting pulled after giving up four goals to Tampa Bay. Bobrovsky went down the tunnel and didn't return, which to me didn't seem like the wisest move, but I don't know if that's the incident they're referring to. Have you heard anything different? Has anybody said anything or through the wires there for you, Murat? No,
I haven't come across it. I'm not familiar with it. No.
The question becomes, with Columbus and Nashville, obviously they're not going to help Winnipeg too much by not playing Bobrovsky tonight, but, with Columbus 1 point up on the Islanders and three back at Pittsburgh right now, is this the wisest move for a team to make when you're looking at the stretch run here?
No, depending on what the scenario is, flat out, no. The difference between Bobrovsky and your average NHL goaltender is massive.
Yeah, exactly.
A meaningful player to play. And I think that they didn't necessarily have the perfect start that they wanted, but they're a very good team. And as long as Panarin and Bobrovsky are on that team, they can do an awful lot of things.
Yeah.
Seems like a tough place for a Russian to play is in Columbus. They don't seem like they get along with anybody out there, but you know, it's hard to get along with John Tortorella, I'm sure, on a normal day. So, you know, there's some issues there. You know, I'm sure they'll deal with it. We won't hear much. I mean, they'll keep it internal. But
so here's the bigger question, then. If this rift does continue, if this rift is a problem between Tortorella and Bobrovsky, and certainly suspending him tonight may have only made that worse, What do you do when free agency hits this year and you need to sign Bobrovsky? Because he may not want to come back if there's that rift there.
I think that the smoke around that one is building to the point where I'm at this point going to suggest that he does not, in fact, return to Columbus.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I like the bold prediction, Brad. I like it.
I agree, too. I mean, I think both him and Panarin don't seem like they want to be there that much. They seem like there's something there that they just doesn't agree with them and they don't want to be there. So, we might see both of them out of there by the end of this year. So,
I heard a little bit about this today. A couple of Brian Burke, for example, and Doug McLean were quoted in Elliot Friedman's 31 Thoughts, saying that the amount of time that a GM needs to know whether a player wants to stay or not, if they're not going to be re-signed, if they have no intention of staying, is 14 days before the trade deadline. Does Bobrovsky move at the deadline if he's not staying? Do you think that there's a team out there willing to take that risk and put them over the hump, depending on what? Because, I mean, we're talking about a team that may not have their most skilled player and definitely their best goaltender starting next year. How much is it going to cost to get Bobrovsky out of Columbus?
I see some nodding to my side. I wonder. That's one of the classic gambles in sports, right? Because with those two guys, you're a team that can get into the playoffs. Maybe, $1 million per home game is kind of what the swing can be like in a
right,
league situation.
Yeah.
So that's meaningful for an organization. Plus, once you get in, who knows what could happen sort of situation. But if you have any indication they're not coming back, it reminds me a little bit of the Jacob Trouba situation in Winnipeg.
Right, yeah.
I think that the play is absolutely to keep him for the drive, and you know that there's at least one more chance to sign him. Already there's a chance as of January 1st they're able to extend him after his arbitration award. All to say, he makes you better if you genuinely believe that this is a unique shot for you, as Winnipeg should. I'm not sure that Columbus is quite there, but it's so meaningful, like the opportunity to get in and the difference in the quality of team that they are with him. But I saw to my side here maybe some theories that it should be good to go.
Well, the thing is that there's one team in the NHL that would pretty much give up anything for an NHL caliber goaltender.
If you're referring to the team that plays in orange,
I am referring.
And they've only used an NHL tying seven goaltenders.
And
NHL
I know that. And I know that Philadelphia is the place where goaltenders go to die, but to get up, they have a lot of guys, a lot of young assets there that they could probably make a deal for a guy like Bobrovsky if they really wanted to. You know, they got guys like Scott Loughton, they got Travis Konechny. Sounds like Wayne Simmonds is on the block. You know, guys like that could make offensively and defensively the Columbus Blue Jackets a better team as well. Who knows what goaltending situation they're going to have to bring up after that, but.
Would you straight up, in full question to you, if you're going to play GM over there, if you're going to be Chuck Fletcher, would you straight up Simmonds for Bobrovsky if you had the opportunity?
I think if I was Columbus, I would want a little bit more back for that. I think just based on the position, you're giving up an all-star Vezina caliber type goalie for a guy like Wade Simmonds, who's a great player, but hasn't been an all-star caliber player in a few years anyways. So I think if you're Columbus, you're looking for maybe a couple of draft picks back, maybe a couple of your younger guys. You know, there's some young talent. There's a guy like Nolan Patrick there. There's a guy like Provorov is on defense. So there's a lot of guys at Shane Gostisbehere is there. So a lot of guys that I think Columbus would definitely take a sniff at if the Philadelphia came calling, so.
If Philadelphia can get a good goaltender like that without getting themselves, that would be a sea change for this team.
Yeah, it would change. Next year, they would be a playoff contending team if they got a guy like Sergei Bobrovsky. Because that's been their problem the last, let's say, 5-6 years, that they can't keep a goaltender in that net, so.
It's funny that you, I mean, again, you're not wrong, and that's the thing. But it's funny how you look at a team like Philadelphia, who has cycled through, I don't know, I'm going to say a laundry list of goaltenders in terms of the number of guys they've had through there. But you look at them back when they were, when they were the contenders, and you go Bernie Parent, they had, that was their strength.
Yeah.
I mean, granted they were some at some points Broad Street Bullies, but Ron Hextall was there in the 80s and he certainly made that team a lot better. And you go, what happened? Especially when you saw teams around them, New Jersey, New York, drafting guys, getting goaltenders and building from the back end out. where did Philadelphia fall off the track to go, you know what, we don't need goaltending. We're good.
It's amazing how teams kind of become like characters after a little while, right? Like,
well, yeah.
Philadelphia is that good team that just never has a goalie, and it has been that way for since the 80s.
Right. And I mean, I mean, just going through a couple of the names, I mean, thinking guys like Roman Turek, Roman Čechmánek, I mean, these are not world stoppers. These are not the guys you're going to go, he's our man and we're not going to let him go. Like, I don't know where they thought they were going with some of this stuff, but
when you're two most talked about things on your team is your terrible goaltending and your mascot, there's issues in that organization.
True. So. Well played on that. Philadelphia currently dead last in the Eastern Conference right now. They're a point behind Ottawa, so things aren't going, although they do have a game in hand, but things aren't going well there. So let's bring up the other, speaking of garbage. I'm not joking. Speaking of garbage.
Segways.
The 2019 Honda NHL All-Star Game, which will go Saturday, January 26th at the SAP Center in San Jose, California, had the jerseys introduced for the game, and they literally are garbage.
We've never been a fan of All-Star Games on this show.
No, well, to a degree. Yes. I mean, we like the way some of them look, but not how some of them are played. But the jerseys this year, which you'll see on the ice in San Jose, will feature repurposed and upcycled materials, including marine plastic debris, plastic bottles, and other plastic waste. Again, I have no problem with the NHL and Adidas going green. I think that's a great idea, good initiative. But why do they have to be black and white?
Well, but probably one of my favorite comments on Twitter was, they seem like they ran out of ink in their printer. That's what it kind of, like the color ink in their printer.
Well, like I talked to a guy, Jeff Tasca, who's a designer for a uniform company. And he even said, he's like, did they just happen to turn the dithering off on their machine? And like, where did the color go? And I'm like, that's actually a good point. Like, why don't you let the Western Conference teams wear their darks and then have the Eastern Conference team wear their whites? And I go, that makes perfect sense to me, but I'm not in charge. So
I can't think of a universe in which going sans color is the most impressive option available to you.
And that's the one thing I think that we talk about a lot when we have it. I mean, depending on who, on what we're talking about sometimes, I get a friend who labels me as the anti-black jersey guy. And I am, I don't think that there is the one thing that I want to see. Again, I'll go traditionalist here, white at home, color on the road. I don't care what you wear for an alternate. You can wear white or dark. But man, I don't want to see black jerseys come out of the yin yang again. Like, there were so many in the 90s, and it was like enough of the black. You don't even have that in your color scheme.
Not a fan of the Kings or Canucks of the 90s.
Canucks, granted, they've worn black throughout their history, you know, in terms of the black, orange, and yellow they wore it in their history. Kings, again, I get the LA change. I understand that. We get the rolling with that. I don't understand why San Jose has to wear black. I don't understand why Philadelphia has to wear black. I get that they're orange and black, but you're iconically orange. Like, you don't need to wear that black uniform. I don't understand why Anaheim thinks they need to wear black. Like, stop with the black.
Whatever makes them different.
I know. It's
for me.
It's all
whatever
from, it's
is
going to money.
Boost the profit.
It's all money. But look at Buffalo, though. Line. Buffalo went to black, red, and white, and that was awful. They went back to the blue and yellow, and all of a sudden everybody's like, yeah!
I owned one of those. Not the black, but I owned the red. They're
oh,
red
did you?
Alternate jersey. Yeah,
look
I think
you.
I still have it at home somewhere.
Look at you. We're bringing out the alternate there.
Yeah.
So the jerseys won't be anything great in terms of what you'll see out there. You might see a little bit of color on the collar, but nothing else. Good news is that Scheifele and Wheeler will be going, along with head coach Paul Maurice, as you were mentioning earlier, Murat. Last day to vote, though, if you want to send a third jet, because Patrick Laine is the option for the Central Division's fan vote as last man in. Should Patrick Laine go? Is Patrick Laine the next best Central Division player to go?
Those are two different questions.
No, they're kind of the same because you only get to vote for one player, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Who's on that list? Like, who's on the list to vote?
It's like Vladimir Tarasenko, and, like, there's not a lot of guys that you just go, wow. Like, the one guy I think that should be there and he's not there, he has to get voted in, is Jeff Skinner.
Yeah.
From the Atlantic.
Absolutely. I think Tarasenko's been a bit of a wrecking crew with bad finishing percentage numbers as well this season as well. So he's not looking impressive by the numbers we're used to for him, but has still played well. I think Patrick Laine is your marketable guy and the one that you should send because there's charisma missing with Alexander Ovechkin skipping things out.
Right. And I mean, it adds a little bit of international flavor with the overseas crowds watching games too.
So your Central Division candidates are Jonathan Toews, Gabriel Landeskog, who I think should be going, Tyler Seguin, Zach Parise, Philippe Forsberg, who has barely played, Vladimir Tarasenko, and Patrick Laine.
I think there's some compelling arguments for guys like Landeskog for sure. Say again, if you can forgive him, that word that I probably can't say on the show.
That's only if a CEO forgives him. That's all right, though. Yeah. If you're looking at the Metropolitan, again, take your shot at these ones. Teravainen from Carolina, Foligno from Columbus, Palmieri, Andrews Lee, Zuccarello, Voracek, Letang, Backstrom. Backstrom in Washington. Who would you vote in?
Almost definitely Backstrom in that case for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I would go with Backstrom, too.
Backstrom, okay. That's fair in terms of getting things going. Yeah. Atlantic Division, Bergeron, Jeff Skinner, as I mentioned, Dylan Larkin, Alexander Barkov, which I was surprised isn't going, Shea Weber, Mark Stone, Braden Point, Morgan Riley.
You know what? Almost every single one of these guys should go over half the guys on the other
list. I agree.
I agree.
The fact that Carey Price, though, declined to go because he felt he wasn't worthy, and maybe this is a rule that needs to change, but I don't think he should have to serve the one-game suspension for that. He declined because he legitimately said, I'm not an All-Star this year.
Yeah.
Yeah,
His name is picked, right? Like
he's the one representative from Montreal that's going, because every team has to be represented, which is another stupid rule if you ask me, but whatever. But again, he said, I'm not an All-Star this year. Like, there should be other people that are worthy of going. And Vasilevskiy was named in his place. And I'm like, that's the guy that should have been there originally. Yeah. What are you talking about? Yeah.
And I mean, I think a team like Tampa Bay could have a full Atlantic roster of just Tampa
easily,
Bay players.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just...
You could put Tampa Bay up against the rest of the All-Stars. And it would probably be a compelling game.
The fact that Braden Point is sitting on that list is like... unspeakable. He's got like 70 points in this year, so it's like
it's crazy. Pacific Division, Getzlaf, Ekman Larson, Giordano, who I think should have been there, Dreisaitl, Kopitar, Couture, Besser, and Marchessault.
Ooh, Giordano or maybe Dreisaitl, depending on what's happened recently in his world.
We'll see what happens there.
Yeah, I mean, Giordano's had a Norris Trophy type season. Yeah. So, I mean, not to pick a guy like that is hard.
So the question becomes, and again, I get it. If you're going to represent every team, you got to have one player there. But should the, and again, Elliot Friedman proposed this, and I agree with it. Should the NHL All-Star team just be two goalies and then fill out the rest of the roster with who cares if they're defensemen or forwards? Like, just send players from the team, the best player from that team. Go. Because it's all 3-on-3 anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, positions don't matter at all. I have a theory, though, and I'm kind of curious as to what age things started fading away for you in terms of caring deeply about the All-Star game.
Sure.
But I have a theory that the All-Star game decisions should all be voted on by people who are children, because I feel like that's who it serves. I think that's the market. It's like when you're a
kid.
That's
not a bad idea.
Heroes.
Your role models, yeah.
You get a close access to somebody like that, and it should be the players that the kids want to go, because I think those are the ones who care the most and who are moved the most by it.
That's a tough question. I think I lost interest after 2004, that last game in Minnesota when they had like the unique All-Star jerseys. Once they started going with like the same jersey over and over and over again, I was like, hey, there's no real, like, I don't even have to tune in. I know what they already look like. I just want to see what and again, I know they did it for like the 90s where they had the star jersey and stuff or whatever. But having those unique looks were so cool, because you never knew what they were going to look like or how they're going to change or what a team was going to do in terms of making it their own All-Star game. I think those are the little things that could really bring back some interest. I don't know if it'll bring back all the interest, but I know some people have said make it worth something, make it like the Major League Baseball All-Star game where it's worth, you know, home field advantage or something. I don't like that idea. I think that puts a lot of pressure on teams that are on players that don't really need it. The one thing I think that brought my interest back, though, in saying that, bring back the guy who doesn't deserve to go. And I'm not saying that doesn't deserve to go, but the year John Scott went was fantastic. I want to see, instead of have the greatest players, have like the top like players from every team, but have your write-in vote, have your fan vote being like the most fun player. Like, send the guy who just goes, I'm here to have a good time. I don't care if I score a goal or get an assist. I just want to get out there and have a blast. Like, that would be that to me is what the All-Star Game is about. It's about going to have a good time, and I don't know if that's ever going to happen again, but I mean, I know some of these guys like to have a good time, but
yeah, you see a guy like Ryan Reeves going to the All-Star
or
game.
I mean PK Subban, where he's goofing, where he's goofing around or something like that.
I mean, he's always at an usually at the All-Star game.
But that's the thing, though. I mean, if you can get some of the personalities there and have some fun with them, I think that's what brings back the interest in the game, because suddenly it means something to somebody, and that's more important than just going and glad handing the sponsors in term and all the you know the corporate people.
Yeah. Do the thing that's the most fun, because that will have more people talking about it.
Yeah, I agree. Like, the most fun is the way that, and again, everybody remembers the John Scott All-Star game in terms of him getting the MVP. Can you remember who won the MVP the year before? No. Don't even remember where it was played before. So.
Whatever happened to Rory Fitzpatrick?
I'm pretty sure he retired, but I think that was another fun thing where again, I think Rory Fitzpatrick should have gone. I hate the fact the NHL came down on that and said, no, we're not doing that. Like, that's what the fan vote is there for. Have some fun with it. The fans want to see them. It's a fan event. If the fans want to see the player there, let them go. Have some fun with it. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm way off base. No?
Not at this table.
No? Okay, good.
I think the All-Star game should be like all about like capital F-U-N, like just fun in general. Like it's, you know...
I'm glad you added the N there, because I thought you were going someplace else.
You know what? And I've never been a fan of the game itself. I think the game is just it's just a big shootout. You know, guys just don't try at any position. You know, it's just light up the goalies as much as you can. But I'm a fan of the skills competition. I like the skills. I like seeing the guys show off their abilities and their specialties and. That's a reason why a guy like Patrick Laine should be in there, because, I mean, shoots hard, shoots accurate. You know, it's good to see stuff like that in there. So
I don't know about accurate, but he's within the right 6x4
percentage.
Yeah. He does. I'm not going to take that away. He does hit the net a lot. But so we got about 6 minutes to go before the end of the show here. I'm going to circle back now, because, again, I want to make sure that we talk about this as much as we can. Again, Murat, I can't thank you enough for joining us here tonight in terms of getting everything going. But we brought you in, and we want to know a little bit more about it. Again, let's go back to the beginning. Goodwill Social Club, Saturday, 2 to 5 p.m. at 625 Portage Avenue. You're going to be making a ton of Valentine cards for women and children in shelters. Again, just let everybody know what they need to do and how much artistic ability they need to bring with them if they're going to come down and help you.
The great thing about this is that it's just an unambiguous act of good, and you don't have to be good at art. You don't have to you don't have to have handled a marker or a piece of construction paper in the last decade. I've got them there for you. If you are competitive and that spirit comes up in you and you need your cards to be more appealing visually than somebody else's, they'll be more appealing than mine. I think I joked earlier, like, I've been making the same cats and dogs, dogs on ice skates since I was, 8 years old.
Oh, right on. There you go. Yeah.
Got to do what you're good at. You know,
hockey sticks in their mouths.
Don't change
the thing. And it's just an easy opportunity to do good, because we've got all the supplies there for you. I think everybody can agree that the opportunity to bring a smile or a reminder to somebody who's staying in a shelter that, you know, we're thinking about them at this time, or that somebody's thinking about them at this time.
Yeah.
It's very difficult for them. Is meaningful, and through Meg, who organizes the main project that we're helping out, I've heard some of the words and the amount of kids and adults too that are just overwhelmed by it when they get it. So this Saturday afternoon is going to be really meaningful for us. The idea that a bunch of men and hockey fans and parents are telling me they're going to bring their sons and all these sorts of things to know that Winnipeg wants to do this is just. Yeah, I've lost words at times, because as people tell me their personal stories about why they want to help as well.
And again, I think it's one of the greatest things that I've heard for a long time. Again, it's one of those things where, like you said, you don't have to be great at art. You don't have to be good at you know, writing poetry or anything like that in terms of filling out the insides of the cards. We'll help you out. Everybody will help everybody else out. We'll get everything going, and then we'll help some women and children really find some meaning on Valentine's Day when it seems like their world may have come crashing down around them. So I think the altruism is fantastic. I'm happy that you got the word out about this. I'm glad that I saw it on Twitter in terms of getting it going. I think it's one of the greatest things. Like I said, I'll be down there at 2 p.m. on Saturday to give you a hand as well, because I think it's one of the best things I've heard in a long time. So
I love that. Thank you. I really, really love that. That's awesome.
I'm more than happy to help. So keep doing what you're doing. Obviously, that's fantastic with the Valentine's Day stuff. Look for it every year, folks. It sounds like it's going to be an annual thing. Is that right, Murat?
Yeah. Yeah. No plans of stopping. No,
okay.
Not at all.
Perfect. That's what we want to hear, an annual thing. So I'll make sure I circle the weekend on the calendar as well every year. Follow Murat on Twitter at WPGMURAT at Winnipeg Murat. And make sure you read his stuff on The Athletic because it is fantastic. Does good work on that medium. Good work there, sir.
Thank you kindly.
Just before we go, quick update. Washington over on Boston in the first. Toronto leading 1-0. Excuse me. Toronto leading New Jersey 2-0. Dallas and Philly still tied at 0. Rangers and Islanders tied at 1. Columbus Blue Jackets have a 1-0 lead on Nashville with 9 minutes to go in the first. Yeah. Go Columbus tonight, beat Nashville. That would be helping, very helpful. Before we leave everybody to get out of this studio. I know you got to get watching the game as well there, Murat, for your report. Jets and Minnesota tonight, winners. What you got a score for me?
3-2 Jets. They're sick of the defensive stifling. It's been kind of bad the first two games out.
3-2. Okay, I like it.
Yeah, I'm gonna say it's gonna be like a 2-1 Jets overtime win.
Oh, look at you. Yeah. We don't do... I don't know what their record is.
They do very well at 3-3. They have done well.
Well, they do. Sure. Yeah, they do well at 3-3. I don't know what their record is. Maybe you know, Murat. What's their record in Minnesota? Because I don't remember them winning there for a while. Maybe I'm wrong.
Playoffs. One in the playoffs.
Playoffs. That's right. Yeah, that's true. They did win the playoffs. So next game is about to start. Carolina and Tampa Bay. That should be that starts in about 2 minutes' time. But that'll do it for the hockey show here for everybody for another week. Again, I can't thank you enough, Murat. If you ever want to come back, Murat Atesh, you are more than welcome to join us.
Thank you.
Are more than welcome to stop by anytime you like. We are honored. We are privileged to have you down here tonight. And certainly, it's been a blast. You've been fantastic with all your knowledge on the Jets and. Something we always look for because we prefer that we bring in guests that are way smarter than we are. So thanks for coming down and making us sound intelligent tonight.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, this is so much fun. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, doors always open. So if anything's coming up and if you want to promote anything, like the whole, like again, doing the Valentine's Day card event, if you got another event or anything you want to promote, let us know and we'll be happy to throw it out to the masses as well for you.
Deal.
Right on. So there we go. Beans, anything you want to say before we get out of here? We've only got a minute left.
Next week, I won't just show up, but I'll show up on time. So
you are making a bold prediction, sir. I'm going to have to hold you to that.
The odds are not in my favor.
No. I don't know if they've been in your favor for a while yet. But we're going to bring back, in honor of Lily, GM Jared's daughter, who has fallen in love with the band. A good band picked by Murat to start with as well. Here's Queen with Bohemian Rhapsody. They take us out here on a Thursday night on 101.5 UMFM. Thanks for joining us. Here on The Hockey Show.
Will you let me go?
Bismillah, no, we will not let you go.
Let him go.
Bismillah, we will not let you go.
Let him go.
Bismillah, we will not let you go.
Let me go.
We'll not let you go.
Let me go.
We'll not let you go.
Let me go.
Oh, mamma mia, mamma mia.
Mamma mia, let me go. Beelzebub has a devil born.